Hello, welcome back to Our Queer Experience. Today we have Dr. Ron Holt. Many of you out there have probably heard of his work. Andre, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about Dr. Holt?
Yeah, Dr. Holt is the author of the number one international best-selling Amazon ebook, Pride, You Can't Heal If You're Hiding From Yourself. He is passionate about issues related to the LGBT, queer, and questioning communities, and is a leader in queer happiness and mental health worldwide. He lives in San Francisco. He travels the country providing transformational education and mentoring to help people lead more authentic lives. He inspires people with breakthrough methods to help them achieve greater personal fulfillment, and his style is approaching and relatable, and he is dedicated to helping people live more empowered and joyful lives. He tailors his books towards LGBTQ youth and adults as well as their allies. So thank you, Dr. Holt, for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much. It's an honor to be with you.
So I guess the first question is, what inspired you to become a psychiatrist?
So, gosh, you know, I actually knew that when I was young that I wanted to help people. I didn't necessarily know how I was going to do that, but I knew that I wanted to be in the mental health profession in some way. And it wasn't until I was in college and started out in a psychiatric hospital as what's called a mental health technician when I got exposed to mental health and issues, relevant to mental health and how it impacted people. And so I actually kind of knew before I even went into medical school that I wanted to go into psychiatry based on my experiences working in a psychiatric hospital as a teenager.
And then I guess from there, what made you want to work with the queer population specifically?
So, you know, that's when I was young, I was born and raised in Nebraska. And I was born and raised to a very homophobic father who made it very difficult for me to come out to myself regarding my own sexuality. And so throughout my adolescence and high school and even into college, I knew that I was gay, but I didn't know how to necessarily express it or to talk about it. And having a father who was very homophobic and would make homophobic comments to me, even though I wasn't out to him, it really prevented me from being my true authentic self. And so that caused me to have a lot of mental health issues myself. And so I knew that once I was able to be out and be open and be authentic to myself and to others, I would feel better emotionally, but I didn't have that capacity when I was young growing up with him. And so I knew then that other kids that are LGBTQ were probably struggling with the similar things as well. And so when I got out and finished my training, I wanted to make sure that I had some resources that are out there and go out talking on the circuit, because I wish that I had that when I was young.
Wow. Thanks for sharing. So it's really like, it sounds like your personal journey really inspires your work today.
There's no question about that.
One thing I think I see a lot, at least in literature and popular media, around coming out, is that there's always this purported story of, oh, as soon as I came out, I felt better, like, automatically. And I know from my personal journey, it still took some time, even after I came out, before I was fully comfortable being my true authentic self across different settings. Is that typical, or am I just weird?
No. I think you're absolutely right. You know, each person has their own journey on the coming out journey, and it depends on each person. There is no right answer to that. Some people feel much better after coming out because, you know, they're finally able to be true to themselves. Others, it's a gradual process. And so I actually have been working a little bit on this, and I have some stages that I've kind of put together for the coming out process. And if you don't mind, I wouldn't mind sharing that with your audience right now. Would that be okay?
Please,
okay.
Of course.
I'm here to research.
Okay, great. All right. So as far as with coming out, I think there is a right place and a right time for a person to come out. However, it's a personal decision that can only be made by that individual person. And that person should only come out when they feel personally ready to do so and that they have the support behind them to do so. That's really key. I think if a person is forced to come out early, that can cause them great emotional distress and harm, including thoughts of self-harm. And so we never want to push somebody to come out. We want to be there and support them when they do come out, but we never want to force someone out to come out until they're actually ready to do so. And so there's four stages that I've kind of thought through over the years on how I think it works for each person. And the first stage is you know, having periods of uncertainty about your sexual orientation or your gender identity. And you know what? That's totally okay. Each person must take their own time to discover who it is that they are. The most important thing at this stage is to not let others define you or force you to be out. And so for a lot of kids, and as we know, for kids now are starting to realize their sexuality around puberty, which is anywhere from 10 to 13 years old. You know, back when I was coming out, it was people would come out at a much later age. But now kids are coming out around 10 or 11, and they do know that they do have those thoughts. And so what we have to let them do is kind of work through them on their own. And so when these kids are having these feelings of uncertainty about their sexual orientation or their gender identity, that's a normal stage for them to go through. And there's no time limit as to how long that may occur. It could be someone comes out as early as 9 or 10, or it could be someone says, you know what, I've been struggling with this for years, and I finally came out to myself just, you know, at age 13, 14, 15, or even in their 20s. So stage one is kind of the uncertainty period. Once a person feels inside that they're kind of acknowledging, like, you know, I've had these thoughts, feelings, and, you know, same-sex attractions for quite some time now, I'm going to acknowledge them within myself, then I kind of call that stage two. And at stage two, I feel like there's two things that kind of occur simultaneously. And the first thing is that there's a sense of relief. And you had made mention of that. It's like, okay, I'm coming out to myself, and I kind of feel somewhat better about that. But at the same time, there's the second thing, like, oh, my God, now what, right? I mean, you have these, am I going to be accepted? How do I come out? How are my parents going to react? How are my classmates going to react? What's it going to be like to my coaches, et cetera? So stage two is kind of acknowledging to yourself. It's like, you know what? Yeah, I am gay and or trans or bi. But, you know, this is also a very scary time for me because I don't really have a lot of support. And so that's when I kind of think that people should reach out to stage three, which is coming out to people around you that you know may be accepting. And that may be, say, like a GSA counselor at school, or you may have some best friends that are out and you kind of reach out to them, or maybe it's parents that are very, very, very supportive. The important thing is to find people that you feel in your mind would be very accepting of you and reach out to them first. It's really, really important for them to build a network around them to make them feel very supportive before they move on to stage four. And so there, you know, in addition, I know that there are, and when I travel up the country, I usually go to smaller areas, you know, like or rural areas where they don't have a lot of support. So there are a lot of online resource supports as well. And I do have some resources available that are on my website. And so if people wanted to go to my website, it's drronholt.com. That's drronholt.com. They can go down to the resources page and see what's available to them online. So once a person kind of has like a network around them that's very supportive, then I think a person can move on to what I call stage four. And that's coming out to others that are outside your supportive inner circle. And the most important thing above all others is at the stage and also have a safe plan. So for instance, like, if you feel like your parents are homophobic or you don't feel like they're going to be supportive, you should have a plan. Like, okay, if I come out to them and it doesn't go the way that I want and they maybe have me leave the house for a while or they're not supportive, then maybe have a place to be able to go to, whether it's a grandparent or whether it's a friend or some other adult. But the important thing is to have a safety plan in place so that when you do come out to others, you do have a place to go to in case things don't go the way that you want. All right. So with that being said, I don't want people to think that once they come out to themselves and say come out to maybe a close group of friends, that means that they have to come out to the whole world. We're all different, right? And so we all come out in different stages. And so people need to come out when they feel ready to come out. And if they feel like there's some people that they shouldn't come out to for whatever reason, they totally have the right to not do that. So it's up to each particular person. And what you were mentioned earlier is definitely true, is that, you know, people feel different emotionally and they have different stages for it. And so sometimes a person may come out to themselves and say, gosh, you know, I still have a lot of work to do inside myself and maybe externally as well. And that's when maybe a person should reach out to someone, maybe to have some counseling sessions, or maybe go speak to a counselor at school, or maybe join a GSA or a QSA at school. Or maybe if you're working, there perhaps may be like a gay and lesbian alliance within the corporate, you know, the company. So it's important to reach out to get those resources so that you don't feel like you're alone.
Thanks for sharing. I have a few questions, and I'm sure Bruce does too, so I'll try not to dominate. I guess the first question is, and maybe this is even bigger than this coming out, how do you identify someone who should be in your inner circle? Like, how can you tell someone who's going to be a good support for you?
Well, you know, that's a great question. And I think really a lot of times, maybe, so for instance, like if you're in a high school setting or you're in a college setting, there's usually like a gay straight alliance or queer straight alliance club that's on campus. And I think that would be an excellent place for a person to actually connect to and be able to feel like they get a lot of support from them. If that's not available, the online resources that I had, referenced would be a good place to start as well. Also, maybe a counselor at school or at the college or at the workplace or maybe human resources, just to be able to find out what resources are available to you in the immediate area. A lot of times, you know, maybe at school you may have some good friends that you've come to know, and maybe that might be a person that you might feel comfortable coming out to. If you don't feel like there's anyone that's available, like in your immediate circle, that you feel safe to come out to at the time, then I think maybe more just building an alliance, maybe an online community or maybe through a counselor first to kind of get you into a place when you get in that stage three, that when you start building a network, that you'll have a safety plan in which to go to. So that kind of leads me to, so you ask about how is it that I know whether it's safe. And so I kind of want to throw it in a little bit reverse direction here and kind of tell your audience members, if you feel like someone that you know may be struggling with their sexual orientation or their gender identity, here's a way to kind of open the door for them to come out to you or for them to at least feel safe to come out to you when they're ready to. I talk about this a lot when I travel around the country, and so I'll do two examples here. And so let's say one is like a colleague or say like a friend at school. It's like, okay, you know, Johnny, you and I have been friends ever since kindergarten. I feel like you're my best friend. I feel like you're a brother to me, and I love you like that. You know, if it ever ends up, if there's anything that you want to tell me about our friendship and my love for you as a brother would never change. And then just kind of drop it. All right. So you've kind of opened the door for them, and you've made them feel like that you are going to be an advocate for them and that you are there. And so that when that person feels ready to come out, and they may not be ready to come out when you say that to them, but when they feel ready to come out, you're going to be one of the first persons that they come to when they are ready. And so, for instance, like a father, say that they feel like their son or daughter is struggling, and say, you know, son, I've been your father all your love or all of your life. I love you unconditionally. If there's ever anything that you ever want to tell me, please feel free to do so. My love for you will never change. And then just drop it. Okay. You don't have to say, I know you're gay, or I think you're gay, I think you're struggling. Just put the door open for them to come out when they're ready to. And when they are, trust me, they're going to be going to their parents because their parents said that to them, you know, at that time or a year later or two years later, whenever they feel ready to come out. So I think it's really important for LGBTQ people to kind of listen to those cues from others. And so I think people can kind of drop hints, or maybe you can just kind of tell in everyday conversation with them that they seem to be more open and honest, or they may say something that they heard on the radio, or you know, I believe in gay marriage or whatever. And so I think a lot of times LGBTQ people are always kind of listening for others to kind of drop some cues as to how they lean, whether they're kind of more liberal or conservative in their thinking. And so that's another way for a person to know, is this a safe person to come out to?
And in this case, when you say liberal and conservative, you don't necessarily mean politically, but in terms of like open-mindedness, how open they are.
Absolutely.
To something versus not.
Correct.
I think that's an important distinction to draw. So rural populations, so folks who are out in far away from cities and suburban centers, and even I would do as far as, say, folks who are inside of inner cities, anywhere where schools might be underfunded and may have limited resources or have a culture in which something like a Gender Sexuality Alliance or a QSA or anything like that may not be able to safely exist. How does kind of seek out that kind of community there?
So that's a good question, and I think that's when a person would want to kind of look at some online resources that might be available. For instance, like the Trevor Project, the trevorproject.org, and their phone number is 866-488-7386, and that's a 24/7 hotline that's available for people, not just who are having thoughts of self-harm, but for people who are struggling with sexual orientation or gender identity issues, or are feeling like they're in rural areas and don't have anywhere else to turn to. So there are resources that are available like that online. And so if you're coming from a rural area and you don't feel like there's kind of support network on campus, then certainly starting on online resources would be extremely helpful. Also, in rural areas, if it ends up that they don't have those kind of clubs on campus, I'd reach out to the maybe college counselor or the high school counselors and try to get support from them. I mean, those people have been trained, and generally they're very supportive. And if they're not, they should at least be able to point you in directions of resources that might be available in the area.
Dr. Holt, a lot of what you said seems to really apply to folks in middle and high school. And so I know a lot of folks, as someone who works with college students, I know a lot of people don't come out until college or after college. And so for folks who come out in late adolescence or post-adolescence, so, 20s or even 30s for some folks, what's
sure.
it like for them? How might things look differently for them when they may not
have
a campus to have resources
sure.
on?
So, that's a great question, and I think it's definitely true. I mean, there are a lot of people who come out much later in life. In fact, when I was young, I mean, people didn't come out until their 50s, 60s, and sometimes 70s, because it was, up until 1973, it was still considered a mental health disorder. And so for a lot of people, they were seen as being mentally ill for being, openly gay, which we know is certainly not true. So, for instance, like in corporations or larger companies or even smaller ones, they'll usually have what's called employee resource groups or ERGs, where a person can actually have like a gay and lesbian caucus that's available within their organization or place of employment. And those groups will actually have support similar to what they do like in high school and colleges for clubs. But it's more on a professional level, where they might have speakers come in and talk, or they may have monthly dinners or outings or stuff to kind of support each other in the workplace. And so there are those resources that are available. Also, I would go online as well and see what kind of resources are, and Google what kind of GLBT resources are available in their area in which their city in which they live. There's also some resources there as well. But you brought up a good point, and that is that a person needs to build a surround themselves with a safe environment so that they don't feel like they're alone. I mean, being alone and feeling like discriminated against or being rejected, that's when it kind of can increase the mental health issues that a GLBT person's at a higher risk for. And so it's really important to build a safe environment around you.
It's actually funny that you kind of segued for me there. I'm one of those people that, I only came out very recently. Folks who listen to the show will know that, I'm still trying to figure out these issues. And I'm realizing that there are parts of myself that, I developed in order to hide my sexuality. And so now that I've, gone through the four stages that you've described, I'm finding myself trying to unpack the parts of my personality that are genuine and just what's a facade to keep me in the closet. And
right.
I've said this before, in many ways, I feel like I'm going through adolescence again. And it's a weird feeling. Is this normal? Like, what happens
totally
after?
It's totally normal.
Okay. All right.
You know, that's a great question. And if Francis, like, when I was young, you know, I wasn't able to really come out until, you know, my mid-20s. And as you know, coming out is an ongoing process for people. Each time that we meet someone, we're in a heterosexual society where people automatically assume that you're straight until told otherwise, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's an ongoing process for a lot of us throughout life. With that being said, I mean, so for most kids, when they start to come to realize about their sexual orientation, they're 10, 11, 12 years old, kids in the heterosexual realm, they have all of their years, all of their, all throughout high school and college in which to experiment with their sexuality and to grow into saying, gosh, this is a normal part of what it's like to be part of society. LGBT people don't have that opportunity. And so a lot of times kids who don't come out earlier, say they come out later in their 20s and 30s, they never got to live that whole life of growing up and exploring and maturing into their sexuality. So it's not uncommon for LGBT folks to, when they do come out, say, wow, I mean, like, I have to catch up now with the dating scene and what it's like to date others and what it's like to be open and proud about who I am. And so it's not uncommon to have like a second adolescence, if you will. And that can occur at any age, right? I mean, there's some people, when I travel the country now and I talk with people or they'll write in and say, you know, I didn't come out until I was in my 50s. And then I started dating and I started going through all the stuff that I wish that I could have gone through when I was a teenager. And so that's not uncommon, and it's very normal. And I don't want people to think that it's abnormal, because it's a way of kind of reliving what you are actually living, what you should have been able to do when you were a teenager. Does that make sense to you?
It does. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The other thing
go ahead, please. No, go ahead,
yeah,
please.
What I also wanted to comment too on the importance of being able to have a supportive network, because of the mental health issues that can come up if a person is feeling rejected or they're feeling discriminated against or they're feeling like, you know, they may end up being homeless because their parents don't accept them for who they are. In general, LGBT people, actually lesbian, gay, and bisexual people, are up to 4 times more likely to attempt suicide compared to their heterosexual peers.
Mm-hmm.
And trans youth and actually adults are up to 9 times more likely to attempt suicide compared to their cis peers. I mean, that's a huge, huge number. In fact, there was a stat I was just reading yesterday that said about 41% of trans people at some time during their life actually attempt suicide. So it's almost 1 in 2. So it's a huge, huge crisis, I think. You know, our current administration isn't necessarily putting as much resources to it as they could. And so that makes it even worse. But it's really important that LGBT people have the support, because if not, they're at much higher risk for, you know, the suicide attempts compared to the straight population or cis population. And they're also at higher risk for mental health issues such as depression, anxiety, panic attacks, drug and alcohol addiction, and higher rates of cigarette use as well. And so, and it's not because that's innate. It's not because LGBT people are prone to that. It's because of the way society treats us, right? It's the, you know, feeling rejected, feeling discriminated against, the chance of increased chance of being homeless or being bullied. All those factors contribute to our mental health.
Yeah,
that's such an important point that you made at the end. Go ahead, Andre.
Yes.
Yeah, I was just kind of adding on to what Zachary was saying. Like, even the idea of not knowing if you're safe or not, or whether the person in front of you at the coffee shop is going to punch you in the face if he thinks that you're gay, or she's going to make fun of you if she thinks that you're gay, or what have you. So, yeah, definitely, I know that both from my personal life and my professional life, how true that is.
Absolutely, yes.
And so, Bruce, what were you saying? I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, that's okay. Let's go ahead and wrap up. We are running out of time. So, Dr. Holt, tell us your website again, and how can people connect with you?
Yeah, thank you so much. So my website is drronholt.com. So it's drronholt.com. And on there, so I give presentations across the country and welcome the opportunity to speak either on a campus or corporation and talk about how to make it a more safe environment for LGBT students and or employees. And I also have a coming out video series, which I think you guys had seen before, and that's available for free on my website as well. And so for your listeners, I have a free offer too, is that my book Pride, You Can't Heal If You're Hiding From Yourself, as well as some coloring books that I've written. Those are available on Amazon, but for those who don't have an Amazon account or maybe that don't have resources to purchase a book, they can actually get a free download of it online by going to my website. And that's available for both my book and companion coloring book. And so I want people to feel like they can reach out. They can look at resources that are available on my website. They can download my book, which is actually a pretty good read. And certainly if there's any questions that people have, that they can reach out to me personally. I'm also
Great.
Available on Twitter. Yeah, in Twitter, I have a lot of followers on there, and I tweet out daily, very affirmative tweets. And my Twitter handle is DrRonHolt. So it's the at Dr. Ron Holt.
Great. Perfect.
I think on Twitter, your name pops up as LGBT Shrink.
Yes. Yep. Yep. So I think if you actually type in either one, I think if you put in LGBTQ Shrink or you type in my name, I should pop up.
Fantastic.
Awesome. Thank you very much for talking with us today, Dr. Holt. It was a pleasure.
Well,
we can talk to you
again.
Yeah,
thank you. Yes, thank you so much. And if you want to have a talk about a separate topic on another, you know, podcast, I'd be happy to do that for you.
Fantastic.
We appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you so much.
For those of you at home listening, come back on Monday and have a great day.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye, y'all.